We're back at the Dialect Coaches Corner podcast. I'm here with Chiwetel Ejiofor, and we're talking about language, the power of language, the insights that language can bring to life, to our situation, to our world. There's something that I've learned hanging out with you, that you love stories, and you love humor. You and I have swapped jokes many times. What is it about humor and the dynamic of storytelling and using language in that way that you gravitate to and perhaps that all people love and that sort of appeals to everyone?
Well, I think humor and storytelling, storytelling in humor, you know, are just a crucial way of analyzing and explaining, you know, the world that we live in and and our response to the world that we live in. You know, there's a kind of, in the sort of style of Woody Allen, there's a key joke in my life, which I a joke that I love, and under analysis, it's for many different reasons. But it goes, it's a bit Shaggy Dog, but bear with me. And for, you know, for those who've heard it before, I apologize. But the but it goes in substance that that it's the first day of duck hunting season. And a man has just purchased a new rifle, and he's put the rifle in the trunk of his car, and he's driving along a freeway, and out of the side window he sees low flying in the distance a duck, and so he parks the car, gets out this brand new rifle with this wonderful scope, and he sees the duck flying. It's, you know, maybe a mile away. And boom, he shoots the duck, and one bullet, and it just drops out of the sky. And so he is exhilarated. He's so happy, and it's a very exciting moment. He puts the gun back in the trunk, and he runs off. He's skipping over gates and fences in his desire to get to this duck and claim it. And eventually he comes up to the duck, and he's about to grab the duck when a farmer comes out of the house. And the farmer says, you know, what are you doing? And he says, it's okay, it's okay. You know, the thing is, I was just driving down, it's first day duck hunting, and I shot a duck, and I'm just coming to pick it up. And the farmer says, well, it's my land. It's my duck. And the guy says, well, I mean, I shot the duck out of the sky. You see, nobody owns the sky. And so the farmer says, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll fight for the duck. We'll fight for the duck, and whoever wins the fight keeps the duck. So now the guy looks at the farmer really almost for the first time properly and sizes him up. And he concludes he's bigger than the farmer. He's younger than the farmer. He thinks, I could take this guy. Okay. Okay. Yeah. We'll fight for the duck.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the duck deserves that, you know? And the guy and the farmer says, okay, well, it's my land and it's my rules. What we're going to do is we're going to kick each other in the balls, and the person who can't take anymore loses the duck. I'll go first. I mean, the guy's like, wow, that's crazy. I mean, what a crazy plan, you know? Says, okay, all right, let's do it.
Go for it.
So he's standing there. The farmer says, you know, part your legs a little wider, just a little wider. And he says, all right, he needs to open up his legs. And the farmer takes a few steps back, runs up, boom, kicks him right in the balls. The guy drops, his stomach cramps up, tears streaming down his face, you know, just in pain, agony, rolling around, writhing in it. And he's like this for about a good solid 5 minutes before he sort of catches his breath back and, you know, he's up on one knee, up on the next, and he gets back up his 2 feet. And now, you know, there's just pure rage in his eyes, as you know. And he says to the farmer, my turn. And the farmer says, keep the duck. So, like I say, it's a little Shaggy Dog, but, you know,
Well worth it.
Yeah, worth it. I mean, I love that joke. There's so many different levels. There's so many. The two characters, you know, Change and the duck itself is this extraordinary character in the middle of all this. And it says a lot about people, about relationships. And, you know, and I've always found that, like, I've always found that humor is a great way of discussing things like that and finding what really does make us human, what really, you know, kind of connects us through laughter. It's something I always love exploring.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's a great. I'm gonna have to remember that. I might get me a chance to use that.
Yeah.
Wonderful joke. I know you've done a lot of classical training, and that you come from the theater and have had a lot of training in terms of voice and speech and all that sort of thing. And what would you say is important for young actors starting out, being prepared for films or for different sort of on-camera things that could be useful? Because you're always doing different dialects. You're always doing just about every movie, you're doing a different voice.
Mm-hmm. I think it began for me when I noticed during the auditioning process, when I was starting out just after I'd left drama school, and I went and did a job in Los Angeles and then came back, and I was auditioning for a while, a few years after that, and I began to notice that the jobs that I prepared for, I got. And it seems sort of simple in a way, but the jobs that I prepared for the most, I booked, you know, and the jobs that I didn't prepare for that much, I didn't book.
Okay.
And it began to be something that I recognized was going to be my approach, you know.
Yeah.
The preparation is crucial to acting, you know. Mm. Maybe some people can just walk in and it's a gift. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in my experience, it hasn't been that way. And the preparation, and it becomes meta thinking, you know, it becomes thinking about the way you think. It's become preparing about the way you're going to prepare.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And that becomes the real skill of acting, because you can do a lot of useless preparation. You know, you can prepare, you know, and you can do all sorts of complicated algorithms in terms of what you're going to do for this character, and actually, it doesn't translate into something that is workable on the day. So, you know, you have to find. In terms of finding your own method, that you find a way of working that actually gives you the results that you want.
Yes.
And then you do that until you want to hit your head against a wall, you know. And that way, you are prepared, you know. I think that that's always been consistent with every actor that I have respected, every actor that I have loved, you know. I remember the first time when I was doing Blue Orange, which was in 2000 with Bill Nighy, and he came in on the first day of rehearsals, and it's just a three-hander with myself and Andrew Lincoln, and he came in on the first day of rehearsals completely off book. You know, we had a 5-week rehearsal period, you know.
Yes.
And he came in completely off book. And I was stunned. And I said to him, you know, don't you worry that I think the received information at the time was that you get locked into certain things. And, you people want to carry their book around because you've got to be free and all this stuff. And Bill was like, this is what actors tell themselves when they don't want to learn their lines. You know what I mean? And it sort of seeps into the psychology. Yes. and suddenly it's somehow a fact. And, you know, it's nonsense. You know, of course, Bill on that play, I mean, was extraordinary. I mean, he was brilliant. And the 5 weeks of rehearsal off book gave him an opportunity to completely hone this character, to the nuances, everything. He relished the process, and was able to focus in that time on other aspects of his preparation.
Yes.
you know, in terms of the psychology of the character, in terms of the history of the character, in terms of the background of the character, in terms of the external philosophies and arguments, you know, that the play was really dealing with, and where these really found themselves in real life. And so, and I, at the end of it, I remember writing him, you know, a card, and just saying, you know, I mean, obviously what a privilege it was, but really what a privilege it was to have the best seat in the house.
Mm.
And realizing that somehow that is at times the complete gift of being an actor, is that you get to be that close to watching somebody do something that's totally, you know, extraordinary. And and for me, another lesson that it's all in the preparation. You know, he took the time to prepare the work, and yes. And all of that translated absolutely on the other side into action. So for anybody starting out, for any, you know, actor, I would say that is the crucial thing, always.
Good advice. One other question for you. If you could go back and give advice to the 19, 20, 20, 21-year-old Chiwetel, what would you tell him?
It's going to be rough. you know, there are so many things that one could say. And it's always, you know, I put my life in the hands of that 20-year-old person. You know? Actually, I put my life in the hands of a 16-year-old version of myself when I made the decision at 16 that I wanted to be an actor, and there was nothing that was going to stop me. You know?
Right.
And I see 16-year-olds, you know, and I feel like, wow, that's terrifying that I placed my life in the hands of a person this age. But, you know, we have to. That's all we have. And I am grateful for the way that it played out, you know. Mm. It could have gone a number of different ways. But you know, I mean, in the words of Bob Dylan, I was in many ways, I was much older then, you know, I'm younger than that now. I was, things were very clear at that time. And it was very obvious, and every single external thing that was happening was kind of reiterating to me that this was exactly the way things were going to go down, you know? And in a sense, I love that sense of naivety and passion, and, you know, that sort of nothing's going to stand in my way attitude that you can only have as a kid, because the older you get, the more you realize, like, no, something can stand in your way, you know, that yes. There are, it's a minefield, it's difficult, it's tricky, there's a lot of things to navigate and to think about and to work out. You know, in the words of Frank Bruno, life isn't easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. You know, it's complex, and you know, but you know, I have a lot of admiration for that kid, and every other kid, every other young person who really make those kind of crazy forthright decisions and make it work somehow.
Yes, yes. One other question before we wrap up here. I'm curious about your, you know, you go back and forth. You've done plays in Britain. You've done movies where you've used your own accent. You've done a lot of work here in America. What is it like switching back and forth as an actor? And do you think that... do you think you'll ever forget, you know, how to speak in your own accent sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's happening with my accent. I'm sure there are very few, you know, American people or North American people who would in any way think that I was, you know, that my accent wasn't very British, you know. But in England, you know, people do say to me, like, wow, you're sounding... like an American, you know. And that's not entirely, as well as anything, that's not entirely by accident, or at least if it's not, it's not something that I have tried to stop.
Yes.
It's something that I haven't tried to actually sort of actively have an accent, have an American accent in my daily life, but I have not. But I've noticed that since being just living in America and spending a lot of more time here, that I've allowed that to kind of influence me and the way that I construct sentences, and the way that I talk, and the way that I my attitude to language. It changes and is adapting over time, which, as well as anything, is really, really nice. To not feel the complete stress of building a character or building an accent, just from nothing, but to actually try and build it from your own internal life and your own experiences and the people that you've met and the people that you've talked to and the people that you've, in some cases loved,
mm-hmm.
And having that as a kind of, as a part of the dynamic is great when it comes to then, working in the States and creating accents in the States and so on. Because of course, when I was starting out, I was basing accents just on literally, writing it out phonetically and trying to do the accent, just listening to the tape of somebody or whatever, and then just trying to copy their voice, and it wasn't coming from an internal place. It wasn't the, if you like, American version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was something that I was placing on myself, which means that in the actual process, I remember speaking to Clive Owen about this once and saying that in the process, it felt like acting through jam, that you're trying to navigate this voice that is a stranger, and then as well as trying to give a performance and justify that character.
Yeah.
Whereas over time, it changes and it becomes a slightly more internalized thing. I mean, there is, like I say, I think there's an American version of myself that's part of my, and there's a Nigerian version of myself, by the way. And when I speak to my grandmother in Enugu in East Nigeria, you'd recognize me, but you would be aware that there is a Nigerian version of this guy, that sort of comes to the fore. And of course, everybody has that in them, and then that, and especially if their families live in different countries, that you have that kind of relationship internationally. So it's just accessing all those things,
yes,
and finding that your own internal truths, and that has been a very, very strong part of my working process.
Definitely, language as a byproduct of context in terms of geography and who's listening you're speaking into.
Yeah, exactly. Who you are trying to communicate with.
Yeah.
And that great phrase, "Is he speaking my language?"
Yeah.
and in a way, that's sort of, it's sort of everything. It's not just the sounds you make. It's just, it's the way your body moves as you make them.
Yeah.
There are things, and there are just key things that people do, key sounds people make that allow other people to know that they can trust them, to know that they're one of their guys.
Yes.
And you pick up on it very, very, very quickly if you live somewhere. If you live somewhere, the way that you physically and emotionally and in terms of language, communicate, it's done extremely, obviously if you watch politicians being interviewed, and you watch the sort of cadence of voice and, that's the sort of extreme end. That's the professional end of trust me,
Right.
And, but we all do it in different ways. Yet, but if you try to transplant that, it wouldn't work in another country.
Right.
It just wouldn't, it wouldn't have the same effect, and there, you see an English politician who I just don't think people would engage with, at all in the States,
Sure. Different rules.
It's a completely different game.
Different code.
And it's unlocking the codes that unlocks the character secrets, unlocks the personality traits, unlocks the, it's a whole, you know, I mean, you go down the rabbit hole.
Now, I wouldn't be doing my job if, to those listening, if I didn't ask you what advice you would give to actors working with a dialect coach, because you've done it so many times with many different coaches. What would you have to say about that?
Well, I suppose it's all about personality, really. I mean, in the end, you know, it's about how I think that it's about finding a way of communicating that has kind of got nothing to do with the words. It's almost something to do with the perfect scenario, I think, when you're working with a dialect coach is to find a character that you can communicate with in total improvisational freestyle.
Right.
You know, that you're and that way you can work with somebody who can just pause you from time to time to push you in certain directions or say that sounded, tweak this, tweak that, blah, 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 blah. But what you're aiming for is actually something that is completely three-dimensional and you can throw away the script, you know.
Yes.
So finding somebody who is kind of, you're working with somebody, and it's something for a dialect coach as well, to find a way of that kind of ability to play, you know. And to kind of, you know, that sort of tennis game, and to really play it back and forth, and to get sort of involved, and not be too worried about, the nature of the diphthong or the idea of just of flattening that A, you know, which you know, and the technicality of it all, you know, it's really trying to find somebody that you can communicate with.
Yeah.
That you can talk to and that the character can talk to.
Yes.
And I think once you find that, then actually going back to the script and, you know, tweaking this and tweaking that is actually a much simpler process. I mean, it takes its own work, but it's a much simpler process if you really can do the other thing. And, you know, that's the joy of it for me, is those little moments where you are released into a character, into a character's voice, into a whole other, you know, a whole other person, in a sense, or a whole other version of yourself. Yes. And you can actually play with somebody and sort of do that kind of banter.
Fantastic, fantastic. That certainly has been one of the things that I've enjoyed seeing and working with you. I really, really enjoy you being here with us on the podcast. I could talk to you literally all day. And I hope that you can come back at some point and continue the conversation.
Sure. Yeah, sounds great.
If we had a studio audience, they would be standing on their feet right now, giving it up, putting their hands together for Chiwetel Ejiofor. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Real pleasure. Thank you.
And for those of you listening to the podcast, I want to thank you for tuning in. And remember, in the immortal words of Satchel Paige, don't look back. Something may be gaining on you.